There is no... Hey, there's no reading into to hear or anything. That's okay. It's all right. All right, so we're going to hear... No, that's all right. So we're going to have a hearing. It's actually shown on the handout as action item number 8, but this is a workshop on number 11. And the way this will go, we figure this is going to take about an hour and a half, so it'll probably take us to the other side of lunch. Perhaps we'll try to get through it before lunch and see how this goes. So the process will be is we'll start with staff presentation and go from there. If you have speaker cards or you want to speak to this item, please submit a speaker card. And with that, we'll start with staff. Okay. Thanks for sticking me out. You're on, mister.
Okay. Good morning, members of the board. I'm Jim Burke, engineering geologist in the Southern Timber Unit in the non-point source division of the regional board. And I'm sorry to start my presentation with a mistake. I'm not sure how that happened, but I'll be presenting this morning on an update. It's a workshop on potential revisions to waivers of waste discharge for timber harvest activities on non-federal lands, specifically those provisions for non-industrial timber management plans or NTMPs. Okay. So I'm going to give a brief background on just why we're here. I will give a progress report, talk about the outreach and collaboration efforts and the review efforts that we've done on the water quality provisions for NTMPs. I'm going to present briefly on proposed revisions that we're considering and to the waiver for NTMPs. And CAL FIRE staff is here, and we've been working with them extensively. And during my presentation, I'm going to be talking about the field evaluations that we've done for NTMPs, and I'll bring CAL FIRE staff up here to talk about their efforts in this. And of course, I'll answer any questions, and I believe that there's going to be considerable public interest, so we'll get some public comments here. So just briefly, a thumbnail on non-industrial timber management plans, NTMPs. They're long-term timber harvesting plans for landowners with up to 2,500 acres of timberland. These plans are their management goals are long-term uneven age management, so that's no clear cutting. There are a little over 500 NTMPs in the North Coast region. They typically range in size. There are small ones, 13 acres, ranging all the way up to 2,500 acres and more in specific circumstances. NTMPs do not expire, unlike timber harvest plans, which do have an expiration. When an NTMP is approved, it goes through the full CAL FIRE review process. Regional Water Board staff are members of the review team. We review, we often do a field review, we comment. Once an NTMP is approved, operations are conducted pursuant to a notice of timber operations. when a landowner submits a notice of timber operations, their forester certifies certain conditions, such as there have been no changes in the plan area, that they are compliant with the Endangered Species Act, and that the plan either meets the current rules of the board or implements best management practices that will protect environmental concerns, particularly water quality. Some NTMPs have notice of timber operations every year. Some of them, approximately 100 NTMPs, have never harvested at all, so the management objectives of the landowner will determine how frequently and the extent of timber harvest operations. In the North Coast region, we regulate timber harvesting activities or discharges from harvesting activities under waivers, WDRs. We have the general WDR, individual WDRs. The most, the lightest form of regulation is the waiver, and this is the waiver is for low impact harvesting, and NTMPs are one of those categories of harvesting that are considered low impact. The waivers are revised, must be renewed every 5 years, and in June 2009, we renewed and revised the waiver and included new conditions for NTMPs, including expanding the conditions requiring erosion control plans to the older plans that were previously grandfathered into the waiver. We included a requirement for road management plans, and we included specific canopy retention requirements to meet the basin plan temperature objective. The changes that we included in the waiver were expanding the erosion control plan program. We felt that was a successful program that and was necessary for TMDL compliance. These new conditions were met with some alarm in the wider community, and apparently maybe there was some understanding of what we were asking for, but exactly how we were asking for it was, there was some disagreement, and so three petitions were quickly filed, and as a result of those petitions, which were not heard by the state board, the regional board agreed to temporarily suspend the new conditions for NTMPs. That was done in March 2010. And as during that period of suspension of the requirements for ECPs, the road plan, and the specific canopy requirements, we committed to essentially collaborating and meeting with petitioners, other interested parties, various stakeholders, to take a second look at things and really get to understand the water quality protections provided by the NTMP program. And basically engage with CAL FIRE, who was one of the petitioners, and landowners in the environmental community to see if we could come up with a way that we could get what we need, the sediment and temperature control that we need, and that would work with landowners. So since that time, we have engaged with CAL FIRE. We have had several formal meetings and quite a bit of just informal contact discussing these issues, looking a little deeper into the existing forest practice rules, how they're applied. There's sort of a suite of options for applying applicable forest practice rules to NTMPs, And we wanted to take a look at conditions on the ground, and so we developed a field evaluation program, and we've conducted this field evaluation program that I'm going to both CAL FIRE and I will talk about in a second. We've been working with other stakeholders. We've sent letters to all NTMP landowners, just keeping them informed of where things stand. We've developed an email subscription list and kept our website updated. And we formed two focus groups, one in the north and one in the southern part of the region. We've met twice. These focus groups are comprised of landowners, foresters, CAL FIRE has been involved, representatives from the environmental community, and they've been very constructive, and it's a process that is providing all sides with some understandings, and we're digging in and coming up with solutions. So the review of the water quality protections provided for NTMPs has three components. There is the field evaluations, which I'll talk about in a second. There's a review of the applicable rules, and there is a file review to see actually what protections are included in approved NTMPs. And at this time, I'm going to call up CAL FIRE staff and... yes, please. And let me see if I can get their PowerPoint presentation up.
Board members, Bill Snyder, I'm the Deputy Director for the Department of Forest Fire and Fire Protection. Certainly have a longstanding interest in this issue as it's been before the board. And I did welcome the initial contact from Matt St. John relative to collaborative field review efforts, which we're about to share with you relative to our monitoring on a collaborative basis and some of the results there. The department is also fully committed to continuing to participate in focus groups and look at solutions that I think will hopefully end some of the dispute that we've had with the port to this point in time relative to the interaction of the two regulatory programs. I do want to commend staff, in particular Matt St. John, relative to his leadership here in terms of trying to get this process moving along in a collaborative portion. I think we've still got a ways to go, but I think a lot of progress has been made. And with that, I'd like to pass the baton to Clay Brandau, who is basically the department's lead relative to our forest practice program monitoring piece. 4PRIME is a moniker for that, but it stands for Forest Practice Implementation and Effectiveness Monitoring. And we are committed to this, have been committed to it for quite some time. We're pleased to participate with water quality staff in terms of actually focusing on NTMP monitoring this past year. And I'm also committed to getting at least one more year of sampling under our belt so we can really get to some of the statistical data that might help support some of the findings that we've been making. But with that, I'll pass that to Clay and let him explain what was done.
Thank you, Bill. My name is Clay Brandau. I'm a senior environmental scientist with CAL FIRE and a hydrologist, and worked on this project with our staff, Pete Caffaretta, and your staff, including Jim Burke and others. So in the next 20 minutes, I'm going to go over some of our results. Let's see. Where do I? Right there. Good. This is an outline of what I'm going to talk about. I'm going to give you a little background information. I'm going to talk about the methods. I'm going to talk about the three areas of focus, which are the WILPISs, the roads, and the watercourse crossings, and look at those results, and then I'll summarize. So a little background information. The NTMPs are limited light touch forestry, as Jim Burke mentioned. They must comply with NTMP provisions and applicable California forest practice rules. And this is really important. They must comply with other state and federal regulations, such as the Endangered Species Act and the Clean Water Act. And those acts may change over time, but they still have to comply when they file a notice of timber operation. Oh, I wanted to mention, just as a, that wasn't on the slide, but just in terms of context, there's about 300,000 acres of land in California that's covered by NTMPs, and about 200,000 of that is in the North Coast Basin, your jurisdiction. So just looking at that, 200,000 acres, your jurisdiction is the North Coast Basin, which is about 12.4 million acres. So it's a little less than 2%. It's about 1.6% of the total area of the North Coast Basin. CAL FIRE NTMP monitoring background information. FORPRIME evaluates the forest practice rules and their implementation and effectiveness in protecting water quality. FORPRIME is based on a random sample of both the plans and then features within the plans, so the sample is representative. And CAL FIRE's data collection in this instance was limited to areas of the notice of timber operations, which is usually can cover the whole NTMP, but usually is a subset of that area. So we didn't monitor the inactive areas. Your staff did just do some monitoring in the inactive areas of the NTMPs. This is an example of a NTMP that's 190 acres. That's the dark yellow line. And then the hatched area, the 30 acres, is the NTO that we monitored. And here's another example, a 60-acre NTO inside of a 222-acre NTMP. And then this one has another feature, too. You see that grassy area that's an exclusion area that's non-timbered. And so this is going to go over the methods. 527 NTMPs on the North Coast as of July of last year. As Jim pointed out, it's about 500. There were 131 NTMPs that we could, with NTOs that we could look at, because they're fairly recent. They're in that three-year window where we're actually doing active inspections. And so we picked a random sample of those. We did it in two tiers. We picked a 10% sample, which was 13, and then a 20% sample, which was another 13, or a total of 26. And I'll mention how many we've got done to date. We've got 19 NTMP NTOs monitored to date. There were two in that sample that we couldn't monitor. Well, there's one in that sample that we couldn't monitor because of safety reasons. We suspect illegal activity going on in that area. And then there's five that we haven't monitored yet, but we plan to monitor. Three of those are in Humboldt County, and two are in Mendocino County. And there were five NTMPs that your staff monitored that were outside, that we did no FORPRIME monitoring on because they did not have an NTO. And these were five that the landowners volunteered to have water board people and CAL FIRE people look at. And monitoring was only completed on NTMP NTOs that had overwintered for at least one winter. So basically, this is sort of forensic monitoring, where we're looking at the implementation of the forest practice rules and how effective they were in preventing sediment movement and sediment transport to channels, that kind of thing. A little more on the distribution of the sample. There was one in Sonoma County, four in Humboldt County, and 14 in Mendocino County. That's pretty representative of how the NTPs are distributed on the North Coast. The lion's share is in Mendocino County. The 19 in the random sample, this is a size distribution, shows that five were less than 50 acres. There were two that were less than 200 acres, and then there were 12 in that middle range from 50 acres to 200 acres. The WLPIS canopy and erosion features we looked at based on a 200-foot random segment within the NTO, and we looked at a random segment of road 660 feet, which is an eighth of a mile, and we looked at two randomly selected watercourse crossings. So the sample is representative of the whole population. So looking at WLPIS canopy, basically we do this grid pattern where we take 50 points using a sighting tube, which you can see there on the right, and it's basically looking straight up. And if you see vegetation above your head, that's a hit. If you don't, that's a miss. And you get a percentage of total canopy that way. This is the same procedure that we use for enforcement, although in the enforcement procedure, we take 100 points. And in the enforcement procedure, we look at the least, the area with the least canopy. In this monitoring, we're looking for a random sample to be representative. And so out of the 19, eight had harvesting within the WLPIS, and eight had no harvesting within the WLPIS, and three had no WLPISs within the NTO. A lot of the NTMPs are high in the watershed. They're up on the ridges or mid-slope. They tend to be the lower site lands, which is interesting. The big timber companies took most of the Site 1 lands. So we're looking at WLPIS canopy, these are the results. There's a bunch of statistics there, but the large numbers are kind of the ones to look at. The Class 1 and Class 2 WLPIS combined had 92% total canopy. The Class 1, of which there were only four in the population, had 89. And then the Class 2s had 95%. And if you look at that bottom line, the minimum of any of them was 80. So we got no readings below 80, yes.
Clay, and you're saying that out of the sample set that you had, how many of these had active NTOs and one season to go through of this data set that you're presenting right here?
Say that again. I didn't get that.
This is a data set that includes, this is a set that has been narrowed down based on who has an NTO, what is your compliance time where you have right of entry based on permit, correct?
Right.
And so out of that group that you had presented, as you've kind of narrowed your discussion to get to here, how many, so this data represents, you have a number sample set.
Yeah.
For instance, on class 1-2, your N number is 16, 4, and 12, so this is a total, am I right, of 32 different properties that you've looked at, or
no,
NTOs?
No, that's incorrect. So there are 19 NTMPs total. 16 of them had WLPISs.
So this is within the first line then, or column there.
So the N equals 16 is the sum of N equals 4 and N equals 12.
Okay. So breaking out then, that first column then out of this, your data set is 16 different sites with class 1, class 2, WLPIS zones that you're measuring canopy on, you have 92% of total canopy being
right.
Present within the WLPIS zone. And then breaking that out further between class 1 and class 2 is your columns going right. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
And with a minimum of 80, and everything is tightly wrapped around the mean, as you can see from that very low standard deviation with a very, fairly small sample. So this is an example of one of our inspectors, Ken Margiot, who works in Mendocino County, and this was a 92% WLPIS, as it turned out, canopy. The one area where I took this picture was the area that had the best light for photography, so it looks a little sparse, but that did have a 92% over the 200 feet. Then we looked at roads, 19 eighth of a mile road segments we looked at, and that was a total of about 2.4 miles, about 12,540 feet. And all but one of the road segments existed before the MTO. So these are roads that exist and that they use for harvesting when they file the MTO. Only one was built for the specific purpose of the MTO. This is a shot of a road fill erosion on a 660-foot sample. It's a 60-foot length. Fortunately, it wasn't anywhere close to a stream, so there wasn't any delivery, but it was an erosion event. This is just a shot of looking at the roads on one of the NTMPs. And a little bit of rutting there near my toe. And this is another shot. Look, this is actually a road. Some of these roads are pretty minimal roads. The NTMPs, the ranch roads, they build to as inexpensively as they can. So they have pretty minimal cuts and pretty minimal fills. Mm-hmm. And this is a look at the road segments where they are on the slope. Only one of them, that red area, was a Wilkes road. Most of them were the mid-slope roads, and then the upslope and ridge road. So that's an advantage when you're trying to protect water quality if your roads are not in the Wilpis. Wilpis roads can be a problem. This is looking at erosion hazard ratings for the 19 in the sample. There were 17 of them were in the moderate range, and two were in the high range. And this is a reflection of the fact that most of these NTMPs are on lower sites. The soils have higher rock content. And these are the road types in the sample. There were three permanent roads and 16 seasonal roads. And this is looking at road surface for graveled roads that we found, and 15 native surface roads. And the road forest practice rules implementation, water breaks, we looked at the number of water breaks, and we looked at 99 water breaks that had acceptable or better ratings. That means that they were 6 inches deep, and the spacing was correct. 14 marginally acceptable, and one departure. And this looks at water break discharge into cover, another very important feature, because when you're the discharge coming off the roads usually is carrying some fine sediment, and we want to be able to discharge that into cover so it falls out before it gets to a live stream. 107 had acceptable or better, 5 were marginal, and there were 2 departures. And these are departures from the forest practice rules. And this is looking at road erosion on the on the cut slope. There were 570, I can't read that slide very well. Hopefully you can read it on your... so the total length was 12,540. And in that, about 570 had erosion on the cut slope, 1,060 had erosion on the road surface. Erosion on the fill slope was about 200. And then we didn't have any erosion downslope. We did have 10 feet with sediment transport beyond the road prism and 10 feet with the delivery to channel. I was at that site. Basically what that was a sinkhole over a cross drain so that the road prism itself was going directly into the cross drain. And I'd like to point out, the next slide I'm going to talk about that 1,060 feet that it's about 9% of the total that had erosion on the surface. So that 1,060 feet, we looked at the sample from a standpoint of whether the water breaks were correctly constructed and correctly spaced. And these are the 9% where we're having problems. About a third of them, the rules were applied effectively, but they didn't work. About a little over a third of them, about 40%, were departures from the forest practice rules, and about a third of them, or about 25%, 27%, were marginally implemented.
Mr. Chair, quick question.
Yes.
Would that
please
be all right? When you talk about FPR, you're comparing, you know, forest practice rules implementation. Are we talking about the current rules, or did you differentiate between, you know, existing, the older NTMPs and the new ones? Are you just measuring and comparing these results to the current forest practice rules, which the Water Board has found to be generally satisfactory for meeting water quality?
I was, when I did this analysis, I used the 2011 spacing and the 2000 rules.
Regardless of whether the NTMP was pre-new practice rules.
Right, yeah.
Okay.
Well, now I have a question that I thought, if I understood your presentation and your first set of bullet points, it indicated the NTMPs must comply with applicable forestry rules, and that would be as updated, right? Or is it frozen in time at the time it was approved?
It's frozen in time, as I understand it. I'm not a forester,
okay,
but I think it's frozen in time. They do have to comply with the Endangered Species Act and the Clean Water Act. So in those cases where there's regulations that supersede the forest practice rules, they have to comply with those.
Okay. So applicable California forest practice rules is applicable at the time of adoption?
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, thank you.
So we're looking at crossings now. There are 32 crossings in the sample because we did two. We tried to do two per NTO. And this is just your staff and our staff out there in Mendocino County looking at one, Mill Creek. So this is a distribution of the types of crossings that were in the sample. They're mostly culverts, as you can see. There were some fords, a couple of Humboldt crossings, and one temporary crossing. We didn't pick up any bridges in the sample. Most of them were existing. Seven were part of the plan, and five were abandoned as part of the plan. That means that they were removed according to the forest practice rules. And then looking at water course crossings by stream class, we didn't pick up any class one streams. As I said, these NTMPs tend to be higher on the ridge. We did have 13 class two streams and 19 class three stream crossings. And this is just looking at the culvert size distribution. Most of the culverts were the smaller ones, the 18 inches, and there's four. There were 24, and two that were 36, and one that was 48. And the other category, those are things like pipe arches and squash pipes and things like that. So this is just looking at a watercourse crossing in the field. This one both your staff and our staff really liked. It had a trash rack that the owner was cleaning out regularly. The discharge point looked good. And then we looked at the rule implementation on the water course crossings. 21 had acceptable or better, 5 had marginal, and 6 had departures from the forest practice rules.
Hey, Clay, can I ask you, what do you do then? What was your action when you were in the field and evaluated these sites to find departures from forest practice rules? Because I imagine the departure means that it's not in conformance with forest practice rules, correct?
Right, that's correct. And as with when we do 4' on the timber harvest plans, I've instructed the forest practice, our forest practice inspectors, that this is separate from their enforcement. If they want to go back later and do enforcement, they can, but don't do it. Don't connect the monitoring with enforcement. So because the answer is I don't know what they did after.
That's okay. Well, no, I could see the separation and the value in the separation. Okay.
Yeah, I don't want people arguing that this is not a departure in order to avoid a notice of violation,
right,
because it would bias my sample.
Sure.
Mr. Chair, I could.
Yes, Sam.
Just because I'm still confused. So if you had 6 departures from the forest practice rules as they exist today, is there a way to know of those 6 which were sort of subject to the new forest practice rules and which were frozen in time NTMPs so they actually wouldn't have an enforcement action possible against them by CAL FIRE?
I believe they probably all would. There might be one exception, but I'll go over the kinds of departures that there were, but they're basically rules that have been around over the time of the, since 92 when NTMPs came on.
That would be really useful to inform this discussion about whether right now it would be under the authority, these departures would be under the authority of CAL FIRE. Or not. So as we go through this, we have no way of knowing which of those 6, but that's good to know if it's an old forest practice rule that's been there all along or if it's one of these new ones. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. I'll make a mental note of that. So this is looking at the effectiveness. We had 9 with none to slight effectiveness problems. We had 18 with moderate effectiveness problems, and we had 4 with major effectiveness problems. And this is looking at, this is looking at major and moderate and minor, the distribution of the departures. Three of those, there are 3 with forest practice rule, major forest practice rule departures, and 1 with no departure, forest practice rules departure. And then there were 7 with moderate and minor effectiveness, and 11, 11 with none. This is an interesting slide. This is looking at a comparison between your staff and our staff. We rated 28 of these. We rated 28 crossings together simultaneously, and as you can see on the majors, our staff came up with 8, and your staff came up with 18. And on the moderate and minors, your staff came up with 70, and our staff came up with 49. So it's a bit different. And I can't explain that. But I think when our forest practice inspectors are looking at something, when they're thinking major, they're thinking something they're going to take administrative action on, like write a notice of violation. And these are the kind of problems. The problems that have been in the rules for a long time, scoured inlet plugging, road rutting, cutoff drainage structures, and diversion potential. Diversion potential is basically the ability of the road prism to divert the stream out of its course and down the road to a road more material than just a road cutting straight through the road prism. And this is an example of a major problem with a significant scour at the outlet and diversion potential, although you can't see the diversion potential in this slide. And this is just a comparison of our findings from the THP monitoring that we've done and the NTMP monitoring that there's better WILPIS canopy on the better on average on the NTMPs than there is on the THPs. And I even though it's not on the slide, I might want to mention that the minimums on the THPs are much lower. The minimums on the NTMPs were 80, but the minimums on the THPs, we've had some as low as 36 and 42, and those were those operators were cited. And then comparing road forest practice implementation, 90% acceptable or better. I should have removed that water break spacing. I have analyzed that now, and it is about 91%, so it's about the same. And then it was 82% acceptable or better on the THPs. And the crossings, they're pretty similar. We had about 19% departures on the NTMPs and about 17% departures on the THPs. And then looking at effectiveness, we had a few more problems on the THPs, 18% as compared to 13%. And so in summary, 4' monitoring of NTMPs have produced similar results to those that we found earlier with the THPs. Based on the sample, NTMPs, based on the sample, NTMP, NTO, WILPIS, canopy roads, and watercourses appear to be comparable to the THPs from the standpoint of water quality. And NTMP, NTOs were generally found not to have significant logging-related erosion problems. The majority of the problems recorded have been non-timber-related, such as cattle trampling, hunting access. These ranch roads are used for a lot of different things. And inactive plans or plans without NTOs have greater number of water quality problems, and that's my last point. And it's interesting, you could extrapolate from that. There are lots of ranch roads that are not in NTMPs, and they're not getting the kind of maintenance that is required when you do an NTO. So they would not be in the net, so to speak, of this regulation of NTMPs. And they're the majority of the ranch roads, and the majority of the ranch roads with problems. So with that, I'll take any questions that you might have.
First off, Clay, thank you for the information. For our own information, though, and to make sure that we're solid on this, can you walk us through? The NTMP started in 1992, correct?
Correct.
And we have 527 NTMPs that are present in the North Coast region.
Correct.
Of those 500, and then you have forest practice rules that were then formulated and amended, and we have different windows of application of the forest practice rules, ASP and TNI, as they came in. Is that correct? Because some of these are grandfathered in.
Correct.
Is that correct? So, and then, so then you as an agency, because part of this agency interaction and coordination is to try and understand, at least from my part, where the application of regulation and rules affect or come in, and I believe that is part of the contention and petition, is that, you know, people had a deal out there and we changed the rules. That was the perception. But can you walk us through then the application? And if you have numbers, fine, percentages, fine. How then do you, how many NTMPs are out there that are essentially of an older character that maybe some of these rules do not apply? Or how do they fall out in the application of existing rule packages within CAL FIRE as it pertains to water quality with road crossings, WILPES zones, TNI, and ASP that goes with it? Excuse me?
No.
Okay, maybe. Maybe probably to...
Can I ask you to speak to the mic, sir?
Yes, I can.
And just pull a chair, if you would. Fantastic.
Bill Snyder again. Just that is a complex question in terms of not only is there a forest practice overlay, but there's also a functional equivalent CEQA overlay to these NTMPs going back in time. So if we break things into categories of rule changes, in large part the rules related to road erosion control, maintenance, and those sorts of things have been relatively static over time. There have been changes in the second category, which would be watercourse and lake protection zone canopy, and that's evolved over time. Starting in 1997 with an overlay of what we called coho considerations, where plan proponents were asked to provide for protection measures to deal with anadromous fisheries. 2000, we had what we refer to the T&I rules, which were rules that basically increased protection associated with Class 1 watercourses, including canopy protection and buffer zone widths. And then we have the anadromous malamonic protection rules, which went into effect and basically expanded protection to Class 2 and Class 3. For that entire period, there was additional protection, at least within the coastal area, for anadromous fisheries that required higher canopy retention levels in Class 2s, basically to protect endangered species. So even though they weren't part of the rules, there was additional canopy protection. It's kind of a difficult thing to unravel in that context, and to say that forest practice rules or should be the only standard that's applicable probably is not accurate, because there are other overlays, particularly in CEQA and the Endangered Species Act, that were brought into all of these plans. So when an RPF looks at a notice that is filed, he has two basic requirements, one of which is to look at whether or not there's been a change in condition out there. Has there been a failure of a culvert? Has there been a slide or some other piece that could affect water quality or other conditions out there? And if there has been, he needs to recognize that, and then our expectation would be that the NTMP would then be amended to reflect that change in conditions, and repairs would be undertaken. The other piece that the RPF has to look at then is certification that the NTO will comply with best management practices. Number of things listed there, one of which is including water quality. So he has to go through that process as well. So there's a number of things that the RPF is required prior to submitting that NTO to do prior to submission, which also have a water quality overlay. So it's not simple enough to just look at the rule itself. We need to look at the whole process, what's in that NTMP, and then what the RPF is required to do prior to do that. Filing that NTO. As we've looked at the process, it certainly it's still disappointing that we have departures and departures from the rules. And I think as we've talked to water quality staff, it's something that kind of points a finger at the department to say, well, why are there departures out there on these NTMPs, and what actions can we take? And there are, I think, things that can be done that range from probably improved communication amongst all parties to the process, improved implementation and practice out there, which we continually strive for, as well as enforcement. So that's a piece we'll have to look at. Sorry for that long answer.
It is
a complex piece.
Could I just add that people with NTMPs, when they're operating on NTOs, still have to comply with the Clean Water Act and the Endangered Species Act. So no matter what the forest practice rules say, they need to comply. Also, when we did our sample, we looked at stratifying the sample based on NTMPs that were pre-TNI rules and ones that were post. And when we did the random sample, it came out with a distribution that was very much like the population, so we didn't stratify the sample. And I have a copy of that, of the NTMPs that were in the random sample by number a year, if you'd like to look at them. And if you'd like the year distribution, I can provide that to the board.
Can I ask, though, it's right, though, that I understand, I think, the complexity, at least to the limit that I can. But is it right, though, that in looking at this, you had a limited data set to look at, a limited universe from which to pick. And in some of these, do you feel that this is a representative data set of what's out there in the universe of ANTMPs?
Yes, I do. It's a small sample, but it's I think it's representative.
Am I correct, though, that you had, and I don't mean to say you, that this review had one, and this was way back in the slides, that there was one WILPES zone that was in one of these categories. Some of these had limited amount of evaluation based on what category you were evaluating. That's just the nature. Either through roads, you had a randomized road segments, or you had WILPES zone segments that you were looking at. And that was, I recall, one that was looked at in a WILPES zone, maybe from a road standpoint, I believe it was. So right. Recognizing that this is a limited data set, but my question to you is, you feel that this is a representative data set?
Yes, I do. The fact that there was one WILPES road is representative of the fact that not very many NTMPs have WILPES roads. There tend to be higher on the ridge.
Okay.
And none of them turned up a Class 1 stream. So.
John, did you have questions?
I had two sort of technical questions, and then I'm not quite sure whether it's to you or to staff after that. But one, the anadromous salmonoid rules, how much overlap is those with the coho protection under the Endangered Species Act? Are they very similar?
I would say that they overlap significantly. When the state listed coho in 1997 and the department started looking at Endangered Species Act and additional protection measures for NTMPs within the coastal areas, you know, the anadromy overlaps pretty significantly. And then moving forward then with subsequent listings of steelhead and other species under federal listings, it added some acreage in some watersheds, but not a significant amount.
Okay. I had one other question. I noticed the road acceptance level is going up. Is that a statistical anomaly, or do you know why you were finding more roads acceptable after 2004 than before? And that was just in your data, and I don't know whether that's... It's only 8%, so it may be within statistical variance, but I thought I'd ask your perspective.
It's two different populations. The earlier population is timber harvest plants.
Yeah.
And the later population is NTMPs. So the difference is not that there's improvement. The difference is it's two different populations.
One thank you.
Industrial plants and one is non-industrial plants.
And then I just wanted to do that because in the abstract, if we adjust water quality regulations and they have to be complied with, that's a huge water quality protection, completely separate from any permitting or waiver process. I just wanted to replace that. You know, basically, there is the requirement to comply with the basin plans, which, of course, has TMDLs wrapped in that, and then, of course, goes up to EPA and then becomes part of the Clean Water Act. That's your understanding that those apply. So if we change those rules, someone would have to look at it outside of the timber waiver process. Just if you were on the ground and you're a professional forester, would you need to refer to the basin plan? I guess that's my question.
Give it to the professional.
Yeah.
The review process is designed to include water quality staff, and as plans come into the department, they are distributed to water quality staff.
Yeah.
So water quality always has a role within the process, right, to make a determination whether or not a particular proposal, a particular piece is in conformance with the water basin plans. I think we do get input. I don't know that we've had a determination by board staff that, to my recollection, maybe Matt can correct me, that a plan that a department approved has been out of compliance with the basin plan. And I think a lot of that has to do with your separate authorities under waivers and WDRs to basically you require the applicant to go through a permitting process with water quality as well. So I think there are a lot of checks and balances in the system there that are designed to assure not only conformance with the Forest Practice Act, but also conformance with Port of Cologne and the requirements that the Water Board has there as well.
Well, the thrust of my question, and someone can perhaps help me, is we had a fairly general waiver to non-industrial timber management plans, and clearly there was more, I don't want to say people were happy about that, but that was accepted more than when we started putting in additional specific procedures. If completely apart from that waiver system, they have to comply with the water quality basin plans as they're updated, that's one major way the board can exercise authority that's fairly efficient as opposed to through the individual permit process. It's just on the surface, it strikes me. And I want to know whether you think that's effective on these, or is it frozen at water quality at the time of approval? That's the question.
I probably have a bit better question for Water Board staff. My sense is, the Water Board has a process where they update the waiver and WDR process every 5 years, and I think probably at that point in time you revisit previous waivers and previous waste discharge permitting requirements and can adjust those at that point in time. An applicant that would come in then with a permit request, either a waiver or WDR, would have to basically enroll under that current process. So I think there is a process that's involved there, but and I'm probably speaking out of camp, and yeah, probably would be better for Matt or somebody to answer that. But I do believe that the way you characterize it is correct, and that an applicant would have to seek coverage and would be, my sense would be, required to be consistent with the current basin plan at that point.
Let me try a third swing at the bat. I seem to be striking out. No, I'm not. It's no doubt the way I'm asking the question. If we got out of this whole process and if we looked at the whole history of water quality and timber harvesting, you have tended to have very low percentage rates, and this is a little bit outside the non-concurrence, although even those were tended to be in a few watersheds during a few periods of time when there's a dispute over cumulative impacts, and we're talking 1 to 3%. The state of California always likes to handle these things by having, we'll permit them all to deal with the 1 to 3%. And to me, one thought process out of many is that if we had a good basin plan approach, and of course we got some problems on the TMDL side because we don't have enough money to complete them, that provides a basic water quality protection, and so it puts less requirements into the permit to solve these fairly rare problems that come up. I mean, if you look at the real history of where were the non-concurrences, and I know I did one state board presentation where there were about three and non-concurrences, and all the rest were in what I call hot watersheds, Elk Freshwater formerly in Redwood Creek at the time of the National Park expansion. So I'm trying to get at how we can have an efficient permit process. That's what I'm really going for, and I see part of the push for this is people are trying to make a living and they want a more efficient process. We had a general waiver. The state legislature said, well, we like a little bit more specificity, and the environmental community felt, uncomfortable at the specificity. But we're trying, but on the other hand, when I've gotten more specific, I'm not sure that it's been well received, and I'm not sure that it's added up. It's added up to quite a bit of regulatory burden, but sort of a hill of beans on the water quality side. And so that's what I'm thrashing around for is how close can the old general waste discharge or waiver be to cover this if it includes basin plan updates as a key component, as a general component. That's sort of what I'm
so
trying to roam around at, and then I'll ask our staff to.
I wanted to repeat something that I tried to portray in my talk.
Yeah.
this is the NTMPs are less than 2% of the area that in your jurisdiction. There's many ranch roads that are not in NTMPs.
Yes.
The NTMPs that have had recent NTOs, those are the best roads.
Right.
And you made the worst roads are outside of the areas that have had recent NTOs because they're not updating, they're not maintaining the roads, we're not inspecting. And so by extrapolation, that vast acreage of ranch roads that's outside of the NTMPs in your jurisdiction is not going to be captured by this.
Okay.
So from an efficiency standpoint, it would probably be better to apply it in another way.
And I'll probably take a third stab at trying to answer the question. I do think that a more programmatic approach is worth looking at. Certainly, we've encouraged programmatic approaches to land use planning and more holistically looking at, you know, what might be a suite of things that could be done to help people know what would be expected as they enroll in these pieces. I don't know that, you know, your waiver process is that far off that mark, but certainly that'd be a question for your staff to ask a little bit and have them think about.
Thank you.
If I could, Mr. Chair, too, I just want to remind the board, the exercise in front of you right now really is addressing when you readopted the waiver in 2009, what was different about that. I mean, I don't think everybody's perfectly happy with the new NTMPs, but what was different was our previous waiver had grandfathered in the old NTMPs. And I think that was the major source of contention for petitioners was, you know, I've had this NTMP since 1992, and now I have all these new requirements. So the purpose of this exercise was to take a look at the protections through forest practice rules and other rules that already were in existence to decide whether the new requirements of the waiver were necessary or not. So if we can keep it confined to that, it would probably be useful. I mean, that's really the issue. I think the new NTMPs that are coming in, I think the board's already made the call that the forest practice rules are working very well, and then the way that the board interacts with CAL FIRE at that time when a plan comes in is pretty good at this point. So we're really trying to decide what to do about the old NTMPs.
Well, and in keeping with that, though, kind of a final question for you, gentlemen, in going out and looking at these NTMPs, certainly you, for what you characterize as departures, there are departures out there, right? And that's just that universe, I'm sure, whether it be just because they haven't had entry in out there in a long time, or maybe they really do have failures out there. But as I saw it, you have in some areas 20% departure from forest practice rules of the properties you looked at. Is that a fair characterization? Yeah. You
that
44%. One moment, please.
That's a fair characterization of crossings. Crossings are the, and that's the case with THPs too. Crossings are tricky to implement, and they're right close to the stream, so their delivery is almost certain if you've got a problem.
Yeah, they're also subject to all the storm events and everything that goes with them and all that flow stuff. So, and they're also a maintenance issue, frankly, I would imagine. At the same time, I would imagine this process going through this, not only with our staff but for yourselves, has been it illuminates what is out there potentially. And, again, realizing that this is a rather small data set out of 572 NTMPs out there, of the ones that were looked at, there is potentially issues out there. There are issues out there on these, whether they relate to roads or other areas of the property-wide use. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Well, I really want to thank these Clay and Bill for coming up here, and so now back to me. So this, I'm just going to touch briefly on our portion of the field evaluations. Clay talked, gave a lot of the background and update. Our program was slightly different. There was a lot of overlap between the two programs, and not to stretch an analogy, but kind of analogous to our roles in this. There's overlapping, and yet we both have different missions. This photograph was in Clay's presentation, and it's state workers and foresters standing around and looking, but it kind of illustrates the cooperation, the cooperative aspect of this field evaluations, and not just the cooperation, but in going through the process of evaluating these and looking at the same things, I think it really helps to calibrate Cal Fire and Water Board staff, and there was foresters and landowners out on many of these inspections, and it's good when everybody can look at the same thing and kind of have the same discussion, and it just really helps in understanding. So we put together a quality assurance plan. Matt Mflabin from our staff put that together with the cooperation and collaboration of Cal Fire, the state board quality assurance officer, and that plan spelled out methods, procedures, data analysis, quality assurance protocols, and it included forms and articulated the goals. And the goals of the program were really to assess the effectiveness of erosion control plans for NTMPs in meeting water quality standards, and just in general to collect data on potential erosion, just what was out there in the universe of NTMPs. We developed field forms for streams and roads. We just looked at watercourse crossings and road segments in this evaluation. We used forms that were very similar to Cal Fire's 4-prime forms, slightly modified based on some research in the literature. And we evaluated stream crossings to look to see if they met the definition of controllable sediment discharge sources, which is the standard that's included in our erosion control plans. So if they're man-made, if they violate the basin plan, and if they're treatable. So we had the stream crossing forms, road crossing forms, and then an overall effectiveness forms. And slightly different from the Cal Fire protocols, where they went and looked at two randomly selected watercourse crossings, a specific length of road, and then they measured canopy. We did not measure canopy. We're not foresters. And we looked at the two randomly selected crossings that Cal Fire looked at, and then we expanded and just looked at more crossings. The goal was to look at least 4 stream crossings per plan and as much road as we could evaluate. During the overall in the program, we inspected 23 NTMPs. Our initial goal, we wanted to look at, it was very important that we were working with Cal Fire together on this. So they had their randomly selected NTMPs with active NTOs. And so the goal was to be out there and look at those with them. And we also wanted to include old NTMPs that did not have NTOs, and so there was no active authority for Cal Fire to inspect, and we would just seek cooperation and get volunteers, and we got less of those. So we got 5 total self-selected. We looked at 141 stream crossings. And I'm just going to go over an example of some of the results. Common problems were stream diversion potential. It's difficult to show diversion potential. That's the least amenable to a photograph, but this is the result. There, do I have a?
Oh, you just turned it off.
Press it again. There you go.
No. There you go. No.
I'm going to not touch that.
Okay, don't touch it anymore.
Don't touch it.
Okay. So in the upper middle part, a stream crossing came down, diverted the stream. Okay, I can touch it. Okay. So stream came down, ran down the road for some length, ran over the fill, and this bare area, fill material from the road failed, and that's a bad thing. That's where you get potential sediment delivery. Scoured outlets of culverts was a problem. These crossings, that's where the water flows during the storm flow. That's where the energy is, and that's where erosion and potential sediment delivery is most frequent. This is a picture of a culvert with, you can see there's been erosion at the bottom of this, and this culvert looks like, we evaluated culverts for design and installation, and among those things were culvert gradient. It looks like this one was not placed deep enough in the fill or at the proper gradient, and so it caused erosion at the outlet. Plugging, when culverts are too small to fit the water or the sediment coming down the stream. It's sort of difficult to see, but this is a culvert inlet. There's dirt there. That culvert is not going to be passing as much water. That's a problem. This is a look at the inside of a culvert. That culvert is nearing the end of its lifespan. That's a tired culvert. Another one, just an example. This culvert is rusted out at the bottom. There's been erosion below. I know we've been accused of only looking at the bad, and I was going to include some pictures of nice road segments and nice crossings. In the interest of brevity, I did not, but we saw some good things out there too. Here's a culvert. There's sediment. We had this inspection on a rainy day, and there's sediment in the channel that's clearly being eroded and discharging into that stream. So we have we have not finalized our report. We've brought the tentative conclusions and findings to our focus group, and basically we looked at crossings, divided them up into those that have erosion control plans and those that don't, and those with recent activity and those without. And our expectation is that when harvesting activity occurs on one of these crossings, that they're gonna be fixed. And so we did see fewer controllable sediment sources on those with recent activities, as well as those that were included in erosion control plans. But that there were still potential erosion sites in these. General finding, ongoing focus on sediment control is absolutely necessary through whatever means necessary, and we anticipate continuing field inspections, and outreach is a very important component. And I just in talking about the outreach, and Clay mentioned briefly that there was a difference in what water quality staff, the evaluations and crossings that water quality staff did and CAL FIRE staff, we graded a little harder. And that's actually kind of telling, because landowners are out there, and landowners are our allies. That is, they are the ones that are going to be implementing these. And outreach is necessary for them to understand our concerns. They see a crossing, and fixing it is an expense. And just so they may, we understand that they have a slightly different perspective than we do, and so outreach is an essential component. Part of the evaluation of water quality protection for NTMPs is a review of the forest practice rules. I think we got that from these guys. I mean, clearly there's a suite of varying applicable forest practice rules. One point that Bill Snyder made is that sediment control existed since in the rules. There's different levels, but I think the basic standard forest practice rules do include sediment control. One of the conclusions that we are going to be presenting with this work is that we think that the sediment control included in the forest practice rules is adequate when fully and properly implemented. Erosion control plans are our preferred option, but the standards in the forest practice rules should get the job done.
So, Jim, I'm sorry, just a quick question, Mr. Chair. So does that mean that the forest practice rules, the sediment rules, for even the older ones, be sufficient? Yes. I apologize. Yes. I wasn't at the dry run, so I'm actually very curious about that. Okay. So even the oldest NTMPs, there are forest practice rules that are in place and applicable to those that would be sufficient.
Yeah, they're essentially roughly equivalent to what's required in an erosion control plan.
Thank you.
Can I add one thing?
Yes.
Because there are differences with respect to inventorying and scheduling for when you've inventoried and have identified a potential erosion source. And then one of the things that the DCPs then require is a scheduling of those fixes. That's the planning, the way that I characterize it, is that's a planning piece that is separate from the forest practice rules. And all along we've acknowledged that it's different. One's a planning tool and one are rules related to what type of management measures to implement.
Thank you. So I guess one, just to not go deep into the forest practice rules that Clay and Bill touched on, but all of these older NTMPs include water quality protection. And the majority of older NTMPs have been modified to some extent. There's not the requirement to amend them to meet the current rules, but meeting the endangered species, there's been, most of them have changed to meet the new listings. So based on what we found in the review, the field, file, and rule review, we are proposing we have a tentative concept for how we will move forward and revise the waiver. And there's been no formal review yet. We have brought this concept out to our focus groups we're batting it around. So essentially it's a tiered structure where it would be a Tier A is essentially similar to the 2009 waiver. It's an NTMP-wide sediment control. It would use an erosion control and plans with. Essentially, what we're trying to do is separate out a category that we can be assured meets our needs and water quality standards. This would be Tier A, and NTMP-wide, there would be reduced enrollment procedures. These plans would have an inventory of their sediment sources for the entire NTMP. That would make them TMDL compliant for sediment. And one of the benefits to landowners for having such a plan, in addition to easier enrollment procedure, is it provides them a certain amount of protection from enforcement, because there would be all of their inventory, all of their sediment or potential sediment sources would be included in an inventory and permitted. We have a Tier B that would be for those older NTMPs that were previously been grandfathered in, and this would allow them an option to have waiver coverage and still meet water quality requirements. And essentially, this plan, under this tier, they would be waived just for the NTO area, and we would rely on the forester's certification for enrollment, the certification that all the sediment control from the forest practice rules are included in there. A downside for these landowners is they would have to enroll for each NTO, and there's a potential liability for potential sediment sources that are not permitted. So our long-term goal would be to work with these landowners and hopefully get them to expand their inventories to the entire NTMP and move them into Tier A.
Jim, can I ask you a quick question? Mm-hmm. Because if there's a liability tied to that, and we're relying on this Tier B for an RPF to put that certification in, who bears that liability?
Well,
because you're talking about, I'm a registered professional, so when somebody tells me that I have legal and professional liability that goes with the decisions or things that I am doing, of course I take that very seriously. But what I heard you just say is on Tier B, you're replying, in fact it says the forester certification. So they're certifying that the enrollment provides the erosion control that is in the forest practice rules. So who bears that liability? Well, is that a professional idea?
Samantha, if I start stepping into your territory, just stop.
I'm sure she'll stop you.
Well, the forester is certifying just for the NTO area compliance with the rules. I'm going to have to assume that liability for basin plan violations would typically goes to a landowner.
Okay.
Already does.
Right. Go ahead. Not only that, I think that bullet is relating to the entire NTMP, so that...
The NTO or the liability?
The liability, and that's just the same liability that any landowner has out there,
right,
with a bleeding road.
Yeah, it's no different than that.
Culvert.
But my question is your conceptual thing is you are stating that the foresters, the RPF certification on this thing becomes in play more, and maybe that's my perception, more perhaps now than it has in the past.
Yes, we would rely on that. And of course, we would not be giving up our rights to inspect and verify, and discharges on the NTO area would be included, they'd be permitted and implemented according to the schedule. Undisclosed sediment sources, that would be subject to a violation.
John, did you want to add something or have a question?
I'll wait till you're done.
Okay. Sorry, Jim. Go ahead.
Based on the monitoring that CAL FIRE has done on canopy for this study as well as for some time now, and typically finding that post-harvest canopy on Class 1 and 2 watercourses is fairly high, we would not be including a specific prescription for canopy retention, but would be relying on existing forest practice rules to meet the temperature objective. Of course, once again, we would be retaining our full authority and right to inspect and access properties that are waived. And this would entail somewhat of a change in the way that we approach our NTMP program, and it would be we would be committing to more systematic inspections because there'd be the reliance on the forest practice rules, but ongoing outreach and inspections and enforcement if necessary. So as far as this process, the potential waiver revisions, we want to continue with the outreach and collaboration that we've been doing. As I said, the process requires all parties to make it work, landowners, CAL FIRE, foresters. We're going to continue making, because we've been making strides in that process, so we're going to continue that. We anticipate coming to you at the August board meeting and asking for another extension. And we would plan on releasing a draft order in September for hearing at the board meeting December 6th.
Jim, can I ask you a quick question? What about, I think there's a legal agreement with a tolling agreement out here on the legal side. Maybe, Sam, that's a question for you. Is there an issue? Is that easily extended?
I'm not. We have to extend it again.
Okay.
Thank you.
One more. Questions come, Mr. John Corbett.
Well, I just want to say I think this staff approach has considerable merit. The liability issue gets more nuanced because it's a privilege, not a vested right, and you can't waive liability. But you got your water quality and forest practice rules. You have the cost of a permit for people to do business. We have the traditional water quality standard, let's say that you can't exceed 20 Jackson turbidity units above the natural background level. Creates tremendous uncertainty that is currently unsettling both to the industry and to your environmental community. And you have the need to avoid, and we tended to go for monitoring upslope into specifics, and that creates the redundancy issue because someone in Sacramento goes, what looks like two people are regulating the same thing. So I think there's a lot of merit in the balance between those competing sources to what you've laid out. I think I probably would request probably a 1 to 2 hour session to deal with a lot of the nuances and balance between all these competing interests. But I like what I see so far, and I think it may be a way that someone on the ground can survive the permits. We can give greater assurance to the environmental and the timber industry on the certainty issue, and I think that's pretty valuable.
That's what we're aiming for.
Any other comments or questions?
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Massey.
We extended this once before, correct?
Yes, we did.
Yes.
And in the process of extending it, we went to, I believe, August of this year. We were supposed to have it in play. Is that correct?
Correct.
And now we're extending it another 4 months. It is something which, and it's not just this, and I don't have a problem with the intrinsic value of the material, but I do have a problem with our time frames. I'm certainly willing to go along with this because I think there's good reason, but can we in the future as a board kind of take it upon ourselves that when we come up with a date that we live with it? Because it makes it very, very difficult for everyone not only in terms of the staff, but in terms of the public, in terms of people having to come to meetings to listen to this stuff, and then know that they have a date, only that date gets shifted on them. And so it's something that I just, this is an example of it. It's not the value of this particular issue, Mr. Burke, but it is the idea that when we set a date, we mean it.
So this is Matt St. John, and as your new EO, I will say I take that
Which is request, why we're picking on you.
I take the request to heart, and it's with frustration that we are asking, that we're here asking, but we're not formally asking for the extension today on this, just as a point of clarification, that will come in August. But there's some pattern here, and it's not a trend that I hope that we can arrest. So I take your points to heart, and we will do the best we can to, when we set dates, and particularly when we set extensions, to have those be more firm.
Thank you.
I just want to say I think it's we'll have to look at the merits at the public hearing, but to me it's fairly justified. This is one of the most complex interactions between the Forest Practice Act, individual owners, and your environmental community that I've seen on this board. And we started off with lawsuits. We've gotten people talking and trying to get to constructive solutions, both between the agencies, between the regulated community, and I hope the environmental community as well. And you don't get there by just turning the radio knob and just say, okay, now everyone cooperate because we set a date. So even though in the past and in the future, I'm sure I like setting firm dates and I like holding staff to it, if I had to observe that this is one time where I really feel it's justified, and I'm encouraged by the progress, I guess. We got people talking to each other and trying to solve problems. So I'm happy about that.
Ms. Harris.
Have you found that throughout this experience you've been able to calibrate and spend some time not only with the landowners but with CDF to kind of look at things from all three different perspectives? Has it been a good learning experience for you to be out there and just kind of have those conversations around those culverts and say, this is how I see it from a water quality perspective versus how someone from Cal Fire may see it, and then the economics that the landowner is always looking at? Have you had those conversations out there in the field, and do you feel like it's been a good learning experience?
Yes, we have, and it's very much so. I think it's constructive all around.
Good. That's kind of one of the things we were hoping for.
Any other questions? Okay, here's what I'd like to do. I'd like to just take a very quick break, 10 minutes to 12:45, to get everybody fresh. I've got speaker cards. It'll take us about a half hour beyond that, and then we'll break for lunch. Anybody else wants to speak on this issue, we're going to need a speaker card. So as that goes, please be back here promptly at 12:45.
Thank you.
I know.